And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Yeah, no intro, no, man, we a few things on the fritz. Today, it's Monday, July 22nd, 2024, in the year of our Lord. You know, sometimes a decade's worth of news happens in just a week or even a few days, as the saying goes. This show is going to be extremely important because we have been, this platform has been working on a couple of different things. Of course, the primary thing that we're not going to let go is the assassination attempt against President Trump. And of course, over the weekend, what did we see? We saw the Biden machine, the operation, the system, saying he's not going to run again. Have some very interesting takes on that, as well as an update on our somewhat of investigative findings, our inclinations based on data that we've gone over. Now, just so people understand this, again, please understand this. I am an investigator by profession behind a microphone. Okay, that's what I do for a living. That's what I've done for a living pretty much my entire adult life. And I'm not a talk show host in the traditional sense. I just give you the information that I deem important to your life, to our lives, independently and as a nation. And there are two major things taking place right now, but they're kind of both the same. A coup within a coup, or two concurrent coups taking place at the same time. Let me explain here. You've got two issues, and some might not see any relationship between the two. You've got President Donald John Trump running against not a candidate now, but and even since day one, but a system. And then you've got Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. and laughing, cackling Kamala on the Democratic ticket. And this weekend we saw Biden, or did we see Biden? What did we see with respect to him taking himself out of the or off of the 2024 ticket? Did he really do that? Yeah, I'm serious. At this point, something smells very bad. And I would like to see proof of life behind Biden. But the attempt at assassination, if we zoom out the lens on this, I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to happen again and again and again until they either are successful or our country is completely destroyed beyond recognition. Please understand that. They're not giving up. There's no fakery about that attempt. There's nothing about that that is, just understand that was an attempted assassination, an attempt to take out the life of President Donald John Trump. However, based on our findings, and I'm not going to get into the team that we have assembled because that's the private part of private investigation, right? However, we do have a team, and we're also going over some of the other investigative work products. For example, the investigative work products of Mike Adams, the acoustics, and others. Okay, others, but we're on balance. We're weighing the information provided, but we're not making any determination based on someone else's work product. In other words, think of it this way, and I've been to court so many times, let's say you have a criminal case, you've got a prosecution and a defense. The O.J. Simpson trial, a very good example. And in fact, the course instructors, plural, I had in the forensic examination of blood spatter analysis were called to testify at the O.J. Simpson trial, at the criminal trial. And interestingly, one was testifying on behalf of the defense. One was testifying on behalf of the prosecution. Guess which paid more? But I digress. Ultimately, you get what you pay for in terms of expert witnesses if they are not ideologically married to the truth. I'm just telling you right now. However, let's put that aside for a moment and let's look at the truth as we can identify it with our own eyes, with our own ears, and as this platform can authenticate what really has taken place. I'm going to start with the bottom line first. Number one, if we look at this, as we look at this right now, with respect to the assassination attempt of President Trump, number one, we believe at this point, the weight of evidence shows at least two different shooters. It's number one. Okay, now you may say, "Well, the ballistics, and you don't have ballistics. You don't even have anything that's authenticated in terms of the audio. Now you have cell phone audio. You've got microphone, the real time news audio. You've got that. But none of that has been really looked at from a forensic standpoint. Okay." It has, for example, Mike Adams, but I'm talking about from a professional laboratory, government authenticated or court, shall I say, certified, court certified. That's a better phrase, court certified expert. So, I mean, people can call themselves experts, and perhaps they are, but unless you have that designation by a court of law. And that usually occurs at the state level, sometimes at the federal level, but at the state level, you are certified as an expert. For example, I was certified as a surveillance expert. Okay, but that certification, you just can't walk up and say, yeah, I'm a surveillance. You've got to satisfy the requirements of the court. Now, again, I could over-explain this. I don't want to do it, but again, point one, the evidence is leaning heavily towards more than one shooter. Or more than one individual that fired a gun from locations away that were away from the sniper, counter-sniper teams. In light of what I said, how you might say, well, how can you say that if you're relying on strictly authenticated and verified expert testimony? Well, I'm not saying it is, but based on our investigation, there was more than one shooter. That's number one. Eyewitness accounts. We've been able to, I'm not going to get too deep into this because this is an evolving, project on our part. Eyewitness accounts do match up with a multiple shooter scenario. That's number two. Number three, it's interesting that we do have, video and audio and other, civilian investigators, if you will, or people who have degrees in certain areas that would enhance their understanding and their explanation of what happened with respect to the trajectory of the bullets and the audio match, you know, pair that up. And of course, the injuries and death, sadly, the death of that heroic fireman. And not to forget the two very serious injuries of the rally goers. Okay. So all of that said, so far, this is where we're at. But this also, when you look at that, and as we were going through this weekend with the investigation of our investigation, which we have not talked about except for right now, I was able to make contact with a certain individual, period. I promised I would not divulge this individual's identity until such time as we have completed the investigation and we are, and this individual has what this individual knows. Notice I'm very trying not to identify the gender. To the whistleblower, through the whistleblower initiative. There are numerous such initiatives, but we're talking about an oversight as well as a government as well as a private whistleblower initiative that's being done right now by this individual. But we were warned off going down to that the site of the assassination. The federal government right now has that site pretty much locked down. And, look, I'm not one to take no for an answer. But then I don't have the legal authority to override a federal instruction. In fact, apparently neither does Senator Josh Hawley. In the show notes, HagmanPI.com, this is video one. Senator Josh Hawley was ordered to, he actually traveled to Butler County, Pennsylvania, to that area, to the area of the assassination attempt, and was told to leave. Now, if I had the power as a senator, I wouldn't leave, because those mopes who are saying leave, in other words, the federal, whether it be the FBI, the ATF, or other entities, they work for the people. They work for his constituents. So I would say, no, you're not going to tell me to leave. I'm here to take a look at it, and I'm here to get to the bottom of this, so you're not going to tell me to leave. And today, of course, we're seeing the clown show of Cheadle testifying before the House Oversight Committee. But here's video one, 55 seconds, Josh Hawley telling, I believe it's Hannity, about being told to leave. Here it is.
No, I appreciate all that. By the way, where are you, fellow Democrats? Their silence is deafening to me. Why aren't they more outraged over this?
I don't know. I mean, I just don't get it at all. But I tell you one thing. Today, Sean, when I went to the site, the FBI has got more security on that site now than they did the night that Trump was shot at. I mean, the FBI, totally late. And they're trying to control the information. Sean, they tried to kick me off of the site. They said, get out of here. You shouldn't be on the site. We don't want you here.
Get out of here.
They are trying to control the information. Absolutely. They brought local cops, Sean. Get this. I'm there on site. I had permission from the local security operator to be there, and the FBI came out and said, you have got to leave. We do not want you here. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to control it.
I want to hear from the FBI director. I want to hear from the Secret Service.
All right. You know, you noticed Hannity, I don't know. He didn't press the issue. Ron Johnson didn't offer anything more. You know, again, there would be some pushback, or should be some pushback. Think of 1963, what happened in Dallas. Think of it today. You've got multiple, by orders of magnitude, more civilians out there with cell phones, with recording everything that happens. You've got instant communications by way of the internet. So what happened in 63, we've got a leg up on what happened then. And answer more questions than of course, we did back in 1963, sans any kind of commission. Okay, so that was, again, clip one from the show notes. Now, page one, this is a letter by Senator Ron Johnson. Okay, you've got all of these politicians, you've got all of these senators and House members, the oversight committees, you've got all of these investigations. A lot of it to me is smoke and mirrors, because whatever becomes of this, nothing. I want you to look on your screen, folks. This is a letter, and this is the preliminary findings by Senator Ron Johnson. And, of course, the executive summary. It heads up the... Typically, you've got the executive summary first, but take a look at this letter and the second paragraph. The lack of transparency from federal entities regarding the assassination attempt is unacceptable. Okay, we'll do something about it, Senator. Do something about it. Congress and the public deserve a full explanation and complete answers to all questions regarding the failure of security at the Butler rally. And folks, we do have assets within Butler County working right now within Butler County. That's all I'm going to say. And the stories coming from law enforcement that were both there and acting in a supportive role. Believe me, everyone was acting in some supportive or direct role there from that county. I can tell you that with authority. We've got some people on the inside and assets from on the inside. And those people, again, we're directing them to the proper people, but we're also working with them to provide the information that you need to know. Okay, so Johnson goes through a number of different issues. A Secret Service did not attend the security briefing and so on. Folks, I'll put this up again. Either the link to this within the program description box, or I will put this up as an independent post, because on page, let me scroll down to this, on page, this would be page 6 in the document itself, the preliminary timeline based on information uncovered by Senator Johnson's office. There are some interesting finds here. There are some interesting points of information. 8 days before that rally, according to local law enforcement, the U.S. Secret Service first informs Butler County Emergency Services of the Trump rally scheduled for, 8 days from that day? But they knew about it at least 5 days or at least 2 days prior when it appeared in the media on or about July 3rd, 2024. So you've got poor communication, intentionally, I might add, within law enforcement, by federal law enforcement to local, and it's never acceptable. You know, I may agree with a lot of what Dan Bongino says. He's been there, done that. I am not. He's the expert in the federal protection team and such. But look, I can tell you this. There are some things I disagree with him on, some things I think he's a little bit, and I would tell him too, I think he's a little bit trying to be too careful, walk too careful of a line, as other people are. But I'm going to come right out and tell you that this was an attempted coup within a coup. If you look at what's going on today with the Biden announcement, the lack of in the oddities surrounding that, along with this, you can create a timeline. But anyway, getting back to this timeline, you can go through this timeline. Now, I notice there's a minute or two difference on a couple of these points, and I'm not going to go through this and point them out. But we have been looking at this. This is as close to an official document as you're going to come. And by the way, there's some images of crooks, and images of some other things embedded within this report, this timeline. So there it is right there. AGR Sniper 1 takes the below pictures of crooks. This is at 5:14 p.m. The first shot rang out at 6:11 p.m. And by the way, I take this personally because this is in my backyard. This is not too far from me. I take this very personally, as well as going after President Trump. But folks, do yourself a favor. Download this report and read it. And then save it. Because it will come into play at some point in the future. Then there's the Grassley letter. I look at this. For the sake of time, we won't put it up. I look at this more of a political ploy than anything else. That will be page 2 in the show notes at HagmanPI.com. Video 3, this is important because President Trump now knows, he knew before, but he really, I mean, this drove it home. There are people on the inside, the government, they want him dead. And he also knows that they are not going to stop trying, whether it's through the use of patsies, multiple gunmen, through so-called security failures, intelligence failures. And the people behind this, this will go to my initial list, point three, who is behind both the assassination attempt as well as what is taking place with Biden, although it might seem counterintuitive. I don't think you have to look much farther than the people very close to Biden, as well as Mayorkas, and especially Mayorkas, in my personal well-researched opinion, investigative opinion, and people associated with from DHS to the FBI in particular, as well as some Secret Service at the highest levels, including but not limited to Kimberly Cheadle, who's on the hot seat today. All right. Let's go to video two. President Trump said that the Secret Service did not warn him there was a threat. Now, the one thing I will agree with Dan Bongino about, and again, I agree with 90% of what he says, 10%, I don't think he goes far enough or goes deep enough. But this, look, you cannot deny this. President Trump had the opportunity or had the right to say, okay, you know what, guys, keep me back here for, until you take care of this perceived threat, I'll wait before I step out in the open, in this open air rally. They didn't do that to him. They sent him out almost like a sacrificial lamb or a cattle down the chute. Here's a clip two or a clip.
Mistakes were made. They were monitoring this guy for an hour beforehand. Yeah. No one told you not to take the stage?
No, nobody mentioned it. Nobody said there was a problem. And I would have waited for 15. They could have said, let's wait for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 5 minutes, something. Nobody said, I think that was a mistake. How did somebody get on that roof? And why wasn't he reported? Because people saw that he was on the roof. I mean, you had Trumpers screaming. The woman in the red shirt, she was screaming, there's a man on the roof. And then other people said, there's a man on the roof who's got a gun. And that was quite a bit before I walked onto the stage. So you would have thought somebody would have done something about it.
So there is President Trump. And it's my understanding, based on the friendships I have and the communications I have, that President Trump has enhanced his own security, his own people near him, nearest him. And I think we saw that pretty evident on Saturday in Grand Rapids. All right. That was cut two. Now, here's where it gets a little bit deeper, trying to, although give you the bottom line first and then dig into why I came to that conclusion, or why we collectively came to that conclusion, or those conclusions, those talking points, or those, not talking points, but those investigative findings. Just take a look at page three. This is in the show notes, page three. This is, and let me get to this myself, because I found this very interesting. And it confirms, I think, a lot of what that we were dealing with. Very simple post by Sean Davis. Biden did not drop out of the race until after the attempts to imprison and assassinate Donald Trump failed. Do you think that's coincidence? Now, obviously, could it be? Yes. Could the timing be coincidental? I'm going to tell you right now, in the political realm venue, nothing is coincidental. It's all planned. Now, hold that thought. Again, you can follow that thread. I'm giving you what we are looking at plus, okay? And then our take on things. Because in the meetings, if you will, the I named this our room where we get together and talk about things, and the whiteboards, and the we used to use cork boards with index cards and yarn. I've done that, but I nicknamed that the war room back in 1987. So I'm going to claim that because that certainly predates Bannon's War Room, Owen Schroyer, God bless them. I mean, you know, but I'm just saying. So I call that the war room. So when we meet in the war room or we have telephone conferences based in the from the war room, we do talk about different things. And no one within our operation believes that the timing was coincidental. So hence, Sean Davis, he agrees. And that was posted on the 21st. Now, that was page 3. Now, to further push our investigative findings into the mainstream, it's interesting that go to cut 4 or page 4. I'm sorry. Page 4 is interesting for a lot of reasons. This is from Chris Martinson. And again, Chris Martinson, PhD. And I want you to take a look at this because this was, I think, point one. It was built into point one because there were more than in our findings. There was more than one shooter. There were at least two, and both most assuredly had help from within and without the federal at a federal level of government agencies. Writes Chris Martinson. The narrative of Crooks, that's the guy on the roof, being a lone gunman is 100% provably false. Now, anyone that certain, I'm going to take a look at what they say. I might not agree with it. We might not. Eric the Tech might not agree with it, or others. However, if they're that sure, let's take a look and either put it on the table or put it aside. He writes, the evidence I present today comes from analyzing and then comparing the audio files. Okay, this is the audio now. From two separate video recordings, one taken right in front of President Trump, the other from just to the side of the American Glass building that Crooks was spotted on. And he writes, as a reminder, audio forensic experts have already concluded that the audio signatures from three weapons could be resolved from whichever audio recordings they analyzed. In our assessment based on experts or those presenting information as experts in the audio field, we pretty much concur. Now, he writes, and I love it because this is exactly true. Today I build on that by bringing you the audio evidence as well as analysis conclusively proves that two and possibly three weapons were fired at Trump and the assembled crowd. This should not be information you get from me. And I would tell you the same thing because I was told personally at the end of last week, going into the weekend, you have no authority to even set foot on the grounds of Butler County, of the area. And they're correct. As a citizen taxpayer, yeah, I do. But my credential, being a credential investigator, does not give me the right, if they say no, to myself or bring a team in with me. The difference between myself and Senator Hawley, of course, is he's the guy that oversees those people. But anyway, again, I don't want to digress too far from the bottom line here. Writes Martinson, I pray that I'm wrong about that. Before that, he says, of course, if those were insiders in the FBI as part of the cover-up, as we all suspect is going to be the case, as we do as well, then we'll hear nothing more about this from the current regime, the FBI or the Secret Service. I pray that I'm wrong about that, and we'll see. Now, he goes into and identifies several, I think there's 8 points here, that provide his reason for multiple shooters. Folks, you can read this again. Go to HagmanPI.com, open up the link to today, and then go one by one with the evidence I'm submitting to you. Okay. He posted this, by the way, to X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, as an insurance policy. Now, again, I don't want to sound stupid. Of course, maybe that ship has sailed. I don't want to sound like I'm overstating anything. But when I was told, you don't step foot down here, you don't come down here. The feds are recording anyone who gets near there. They're interested. They've got surveillance, active surveillance on that property. I don't know if anyone's told you this. Too bad they couldn't have done that, but that wasn't their intent because they're part of the problem. The individual I talked to said, don't do anything and they can get you dead. Again, I don't want to overstate the what's going on here. But I don't think you can overstate it. So then this weekend, we see all of a sudden out of nowhere, and again, I'm going to connect the dots here, and I have a guest coming on, and we're going to be talking about a number of things. But then we see this weekend, Friday. Now, Face the Nation, for example. I'm just going to give you some inside scoop. You probably already know this. Face the Nation, which aired Sunday morning, or Deface the Nation. Those programs, a lot of those, they're recorded on Fridays and aired on Sunday. So you had Biden's campaign person, manager, come right out on Face the Nation and say, yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's staying right in the race. Okay. You've seen things happen. And one of the clips might have this, you know, it happens slowly at first, then it happens all of a sudden. And that's the way it played out. By the way, I don't know if I get a cookie or anything. If you go to my ex account, it was on June 14th, I believe. I did send out a post where I said there's 0% chance of Biden being on the ticket. Yeah, that was well over a month plus ago. But then again, the bottom line here, everyone could have seen that coming, I believe. But you've got Biden resigning at 1:46 p.m. 1:46 in the afternoon on Sunday, yesterday, the 21st. Now, let me ask you a question. If you were going to, when I say resign from the campaign, in other words, not run again. The last time that happened was March 31st, 1968, where President Lyndon Johnson addressed the nation. Now, let me show you. I'll tell you what. Let's go to that. Let's go to video three, cut three. This is about a minute 30. It's cut down. We'll stop it in a minute 30. This is his address from the Oval Office on March 31st, 1968. And I'm going to tell you why all of this backdrop is important after this cut. Cut three. And again, go to HagmanPI.com, open up the program description. All of this will be in the program description. All of these links, you can see them for yourself, download them, share with friends, families, neighbors, whatever. Here it is.
With America's future under challenge right here at home, with our hopes and the world's hopes for peace and the balance every day, I do not believe that I should devote an hour or a day of my time to any personal partisan causes or to any duties other than the awesome duties of this office, the presidency of your country. Accordingly, I shall not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president. But let men everywhere know, however, that a strong and a confident and a vigilant America stands ready tonight to seek an honorable peace, and stands ready tonight to defend an honored cause, whatever the price, whatever the burden, whatever the sacrifice that duty may require. Thank you for listening. Good night, and God bless all of you.
All right. Now, there are some similarities, and there are, well, fewer similarities, I should say, than oddities that took place this weekend. The similarities with respect to President Lyndon Baines Johnson, interestingly, you know, he would look out and did look out the Oval Office window of the Oval Office and see smoke pouring out from the city, from the riots, from the racially charged riots, both before that announcement as well as after that announcement. Remember the summer of 68 and the open convention in 68, same place it was back then as it is now, Chicago. And that, by the way, the DNC convention is August 19th through the 23rd. Okay, so, and I won't get too deep into the similarities or differences. Well, the similarities, but now you've got a man who makes probably the most important decision of his tenure as the occupant of the Oval Office, going from last week saying, "Oh, I'm in it to win it, baby." Over the course of one weekend, and I suspect perhaps 1 hour, says, "I'm out." But how does he do it? He does it by letter. Now, attached to the show notes for today, Eric the Tech, is the actual resignation letter. I have it as page 5. If we can put that up, that would be great. I'm not going to read it. You can read it yourself. The interesting parts of this is not the content, but the lack of presentation. What am I referring to? This looks like somebody got on WordPress and wrote it. Did Biden write this? And if you scroll down to the bottom, thank you. I want you to take a look at that signature. When in the course of human history, American history, again, the content to me at this point is not important because I don't believe Biden wrote this, nor do I believe Biden signed this. And to echo that point, and again, how does this relate to what happened with President Trump and the assassination? What happened really over the last decade? Is we have an ongoing coup within this country and concurrent coups, multiple coups, coups within coups. If we can bring up page 12, which is the attachment, I want you to take a look at this. We went through, as did others, I'm not going to claim exclusivity on this. We went through every document signed that we could find that was signed by Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Now, there's a distinctive change consistent with cognitive decline from 2008 to the present. Or I think we 2008 roughly, that presidential campaign, or at least the primary on this. The signature on the left is Biden's signature, most recent normal, shall we say, signature. Look at the signature on the right, which appeared at the bottom of that letter. Does that even look remotely close? Who signed that letter? Did Biden himself resign? Does he know he's not, or, you know, not resigned, but not running? Does he even know he's not running? Has anyone told him? Because most assuredly, he did not sign. I want you to take a look at those signatures. You may say, well, you know, no, No, and hell no. In a historical document where one says, I am not going to accept or I'm not going to accept the nomination at the convention. I'm not running. That's a historical document. You know damn well it's going to be on letterhead, specific letterhead, maybe his personal letterhead. It doesn't matter. And he would sign it himself. Which brings me to the point where, all right, he supposedly has COVID. When's the last time we saw him? Well, I'll show you right now. Videos 5 and 6. This is a page from the Gateway Pundit. There's no audio with these videos. And if you, Eric the Tech, I don't even know how to, you man, can manage to do this. But if you can bring up the first video within that article. One video is him leaving to go to his Delaware home. Let me rephrase that. The most recent videos, one has him descending the stairs, one has him ascending the stairs of Air Force One. We should take a look at the fragility of this guy. And you may say, oh, I know about that. I know how fragile this guy is. We've seen it a million times. Do you see anything different there? What do you see when you look at that? There he is ascending the steps of Air Force One. Now, there's another video. We don't have to play that second video in the interest of time. It's very similar. The fragility, the apparent fragility, is there. Something very, very important smells with this. Again, we need proof of life right now. Who is the one that drafted that letter? Who signed that letter? Does Joe Biden even know about him not accepting the nomination or running in 2024? And if the cognitive decline is the reason or part of the reason, then he's got to resign the presidency right effing now. Why? Because our country is in peril right now. And to those of you who sent me emails saying, how dare you hang your flag upside down, American flag, it's disrespectful. It's a sign of national distress. Are we not in national distress right now? It would surprise you if someone attacked our country or attacked our interests overseas. Would it surprise you if China made a move on Taiwan? Would it surprise you? Would anything surprise you at this point with respect to geopolitical events? Why would Biden make such a historical announcement, monumental announcement, on social media? The letter he posted was not written on White House stationery, not even written on personal stationery. His signature looked photoshopped. There was an underline when we could not find in, what, 15 years where he ever underlined his signature, ever. I don't even know. The spelling certainly was odd on that, the surname. No generational marker there as well in terms of junior, senior, you know.
Power of attorney signature.
Could be. I thought of that, interestingly enough, when there appeared to be like an S at the end of Biden's name. I've been looking at stuff all weekend, so I don't know. But S, of course, would be standard for someone else signed it, but it wouldn't be necessarily part of his surname, so I don't know. But you could be more right than wrong, Eric the Tech. His brother, Frank Biden, told CBS News that health was absolutely the deciding factor in his decision. And he then told CBS, and I quote, selfishly, I will have him back to enjoy, now listen to this, whatever time he has left. What? Oh, you don't believe me? Let's go to cut 4A on the show notes. This is cut 4A. If you go to HagmanPI.com, open up the description box under the video, nowhere else, under the video, and take a look at all of these. It's all right there. This is cut 4A.
CBS News had a brief conversation with Frank Biden, one of President Biden's two younger brothers, and here's what he told us. He said, "I'm incredibly proud of my brother. Selfishly, I will have him back to enjoy whatever time we have left. He is a genuine hero. Country over self. It sounds corny in our cynical political environment, but he nor I are cynical. The goal remains the same: defeat Trump and continue the work that Joe has done. My hope is that our party rallies around this heroic act." We asked him whether he feels that his brother's overall health and vitality played a major role in this decision, and he says, "In my humble opinion, absolutely." So a member of the president's family now confirming that the president's health was indeed a major factor in this decision and calling his brother a hero for making the decision to pass the torch to Kamala Harris.
So, Nancy, sorry, can you clarify that the family is saying his health was or was not a factor?
He's saying that in his humble opinion, yes, the president's health and vitality played a considerable role in his decision. It's important to note Frank Biden is not speaking for the family writ large. This was simply a conversation between CBS News and Frank Biden. Unclear how much input he had in this decision, but he says that he believes that his brother's health did play a role, and he says that the goal remains the same: to defeat Donald Trump.
Well, that is notable because to date, the family, the White House, the establishment has rejected the premise that there was anything that was challenging the president's mental acuity or his health, and that all these accusations were baseless, that it was just age and a few, you know, difficult nights like he had on the debate stage. So that is a change in message.
Well, there it is. So health was definitely a factor. So I'm going to tell you right now, I don't expect Joe Biden. I don't wish ill on anyone. I don't expect him to live much longer. And this was a coup. Perhaps this person could say it better than I can. Friend Jack Pozo, he's a great guy. Naval intelligence. I mean, you're never former in that position. But I happened to catch this. This is Jack Posobiec. This is cut 7. Biden was taken out by the elites of his own party. This is a coup. And this is a nice segue to my guest coming up, Chad Stewart. We'll be talking about this and more. But let's go to cut 7. This is just about 2.5 minutes. But please, this kind of is the icing on the cake of the larger picture. Listen to what he's got to say.
And I'm going to say what a lot of these folks aren't saying. I'm just going to say it. If you think that there is consensus among the people who want Joe Biden to leave, that they will support Kamala, Vice President Harris, you would be mistaken. And I'm going to say that because if they're going to come out and say all their little things on background off the record, but they're not going to be fully honest, I'm going to be honest for them. I'm in these rooms. I see what they say in conversations. A lot of them are not just interested in removing the president. They are interested in removing the whole ticket.
Your reaction, Jack Posobiec.
Well, Charlie, you know, it's amazing because I was just thinking about that live stream as Tyler was talking, and there was a lot, as I guess you would say, there's a lot of tea that was spilled on that live stream. And so AOC and those clips, by the way, have just become one of President Trump and J.D. Vance's best gifts for the next couple of months and really just a few weeks going forward here, because we're just about halfway through the summer. And then once the fall rolls around, that's really just a shootout to Election Day. Look, and certainly when early votes start going in, look, she said it exactly right. She said it exactly right. This was a coup. This was a takedown of the Democrat process. This was something that was done in the back rooms and shady deals. By the way, how are you going to call Donald Trump a threat to democracy now? How are you going to call Donald Trump the greatest threat to democracy when you guys just iced your own nominee in front of the whole world? OK, it wasn't Donald Trump wasn't the one who got taken out. It was Joe Biden who was taken out. He was taken out by the elites of his own party. And he did it in front of everyone. They did it worse than Kristi Noem did to her dog. And so we saw this. Now, you're not going to be able to put it back anymore. And so the things that Vivek has been saying, the things that Mike Benz has been saying about how we've all been saying that you're controlled by an oligarchy, that all of these things are connected behind the scenes, that there are power brokers that have direct control over yes. our politicians. It's all open now. It's all completely open.
Well,
Donald Trump is not the threat to democracy. This machine is.
What you're saying is the exposure of this oligarchy, as described by Jack Posobiec. This is the deep state at work. They're done with Biden. They are absolutely done with Biden. You know, when there's a president, for example, when Reagan was shot and he was under anesthetic and coming out, there was always a Secret Service agent as well as another individual, somebody with top clearance there to make certain that no one was in the room or no, that he did not, in his stupor, say anything that would be critically important to our national security. We don't have that with Biden at this point. And that should tell you a lot, because the next phase of this operation, I believe, has to be the demise of Joseph Robinette Biden. When I say demise, I'm talking about the actual physical demise. So don't be surprised if you wake up on Friday or Thursday or Tuesday even and hear that he's no longer with us. He suffered a stroke, a heart attack, a fall, hit his head, tripped over his dog's tail, whatever. I'm telling you, it's coming. Because there's a lot of money at play here with the DNC. You've got 3,937 delegates. Biden delegates are really at this point could very well be either committed to Kamala, which is a loser, or maybe they might become open delegates depending on what happens and how it happens. So don't rule out. And again, I'm not wishing any harm on anyone. And understand this, you've got a couple of different camps within the DNC that are all part of this oligarchy. And think back to the assassination attempt. You've got Obama and the Obamas who hate the Bidens. I'm telling you, I could not describe to you the animus there. And then you've got Bill and Hillary who hate, well, and by the way, Jill and Joe Biden hate the Obamas as well. And then you've got the Bill and Hillary camp. And under these different camps, you've got Schumer, Pelosi, Jeffries on one side. That's more like the Obama camp. And then Obama, by the way, has not endorsed anyone. And he's also pushing behind the scenes for an open convention to happen. When you take a look at what's taking place right now with Biden and President Trump, they're not done with either one of those. They need to take out both, especially President Trump. And I'm afraid you're going to see something much larger and much more dire with respect to President Trump. Biden, that's easy. with wet work. That's easy. I want you to think about this and think about the timing of everything. You think the timing is coincidental? It's not. All right, coming up next is Chad Stewart. Britfield.com. The link will be in the program description box. I'm telling you what, this guy is like on top of everything as well. Before I get to Chad, take a quick break here. And I want you to go to, folks, trikono.com/Hagman. Trikono.com/Hagman. Look, if you suffer from any type of daily pain, here's what I need you to do. You got to listen to this message very carefully. What we know about the root cause of pain is changing forever. As we age, aches and pains are natural. And we're searching for effective ways to relieve pain without the side effects and potential addiction. So let's talk honestly here. We've all seen the horrors of people getting hooked on different opiates and such. And you may have family members or you may have been affected personally. And that's where the pioneering medical scientist comes in, Clint Winters. This guy is good, man. You may have seen this world-renowned health expert featured in the national media as he's unveiled a natural pain reliever that's taking the world by storm. And I'm talking about I'm pulling a Biden here. Canolidine, the 100% drug-free way to get full-body pain relief without dangerous pills. Now, as you take a look at the screen, you see that, okay? Canolidine has become the go-to pain reliever for over 1 million Americans and hundreds of professional athletes. I'm telling you, if the athletes use this, I'm paying attention. It's so powerful that it was even used extensively by UFC fighters, and those guys know a thing or two about managing pain. Now, get this. Clint explains how canolidine is the only compound on earth that optimizes your body's natural painkillers, called endorphins, of course, at any age. When taken daily, your body will fire back to relieving pain like you were in your prime in just days. And let me tell you, I was skeptical, but it works. I've tried virtually everything with respect to my neck, my back, everything. Look, it's like all my daily aches and pains just faded away. My joints and so on, muscles feel like they've been renewed. Best of all, canolidine does not make me feel the least bit groggy or drugged up. I feel great, alert, focused for the day ahead. And best news, canolidine has no documented side effects after 14, count them, 14 years of extensive testing. So hear me when I say this, canolidine is absolutely the future of pain relief. So if you're dealing with pain, make sure to click on the link below and check out Clint's amazing informative report on 100% American-made canolidine. This innovation is changing lives by providing safe and powerful relief at one-tenth of the cost of expensive pain medication. So here's the best part. When you click on the link below today, because this will expire at midnight here, you can access the only canolidine product in the world for less than $1 a day. And this private link and discount, in fact, will stay active until midnight tonight. So try canolidine risk-free for a full 90 days. You've got nothing to lose, nothing. You're days away from finally beating pain forever. Go to trycanolidine.com/Hagman right now. See for yourself. All right. With me, Chad Stewart. Britfield.com. Let me tell you something. I've had him on before. We've talked about his books. It's in fact, the Britfield and the Lost Crown. Pardon me as I... Boy, what a mess. I make a mess on my studio desk here. Britfield and the Lost Crown. Tell you what. If you don't have this, this is an award-winning, best-selling, fast-paced adventure novel that transports the reader, I'm telling you right now, from the smoldering crags of Yorkshire through the heart of England and then to the shores of Dover. It's a cool book and series of books. It's about friendship, family, loyalty, and courage. It's the stuff that young people should be reading today, not other crap. This is the best of the best. And then I'm going to tell you, there's going to be a series of movies coming up, theatrical plays that have been done, global book tours right now. I'm telling you, folks, just go to Britfield.com, click in the box below, because you've got to see for yourself the amazing work this man has done. Chad Stewart, I'm so happy to have you with me. But before we get into your book, if you want to comment on the recent events, please do so. Good to see
Doug, you. Great to see you again, and always honored to be on your show. I love it. It's one of the hallmark shows and real media, and so thank you for having me. And great,
Chuck will be in the mail for open. That. But thanks, appreciate it. But no, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah,
if I follow that opening. That was phenomenal. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I mean it. My grandchildren have these books, and I mean, I just love it. But before we get into that, can you? My whole premise, and really the title for today's show, the first segment, is the fact that we're experiencing coups, a coup within a coup, different coups at different levels by different globalist elitists and such. The assassination attempt of President Trump, the current announcement or the announcement by Biden, I think there is some connected by people and by an agendas. I think the agenda is the same on both ends, taking those two out. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a broad question and fascinating last 10 days, to say the least. And we expected it. We knew it was going to happen. It's always the usual suspects. It's a clown show. And it's a lot of theater. And it'll be very interesting. I know there's a lot of theories going out there. Do we have an election? Will we get to the election? I mean, we know that Trump would win by 90%. We know that the Democratic Party is finished and has been over for years. Everything you're seeing right now with statistics is fake and false. I saw something, I think it was PBS, and I never really watched this stuff because it makes me nauseous. But they were showing some of these, like, you know, running mates against Trump, and it was like they were like 2 points ahead of him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what six people did you pay to take that survey? And it's just like, it's just the constant lying from mainstream media. And by the way, thanks. I had to watch that five minutes of CBS. It made me cringe. It's like, that's the first time I've actually watched mainstream media that long in half a decade. But you have to do it. You have to follow this stuff. But it's just theater, scripted actors, no more journalism. It's a wonderful time for Trump. I'm excited. I believe he's coming back. I believe the hand of God is on this thing. We witnessed that just last weekend. And so so I'll parlay that into saying this, that it's interesting because a lot of this is flashover substance. It's fear-based. So-and-so is going to run or so-and-so is going to run. I don't even believe the vice president. And that's a whole other rabbit hole. Useless, to say the very least. Don't even think that he, she is qualified to run. But anyway, you know, that's just nonsense. And I don't even believe Hillary's still around, but you'll hear this, you know, so it's all fear. It's all to get you anxious and antsy. But it's interesting with the Britfield series, because I know all this stuff. I've gone down the rabbit hole. Your show was one of the first shows, you know, gosh, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, along with, Dave Hodges and, Steve, a lot of those guys, you know, I mean, you were my resource of information. You helped me relearn history, wake up, pull the curtain, see what's really going on. And literally for the last 12 years, those have been my deep dives, you know, thousands of hours into I like to call it real media and books and, you know, recommended books and some of Quayle's books and stuff. So I've gotten all this great information. So what do you do with it? It's like, you've been called to what you're doing, which is amazing. You're at the forefront of this. You have to read these things. You have to report these things. I'm investing in the next generation of children. And that's my focus with the Britfield series. And so I include all of these things in the Britfield series. Book one's kind of the great kickoff, you know, Britfield and the Lost Crown. 12-year-old Tom is up in, you know, Weatherly Orphanage. And there's so much threaded information through book one and the rest of the series. Book two has always been my Empire Strikes Back. It's called Britfield and the Rise of the Lion. And that's really where I pull the curtain. I introduce the committee. I introduce bloodlines, secret societies, groups that are behind the scenes that really, frankly, control everything, dictate things, agendas, wars, nonprofits that funnel, you know, billions of dollars into their own pocket. All this stuff is in the books, you know. Now, it's not the main theme, but it's just behind the scenes. It's threaded in there. It's spoken as a matter of fact. It's not speculation, because it is true. It's all documented. And then you get into book three, Britfield and the Return of the Prince. And I start to get into social media, why it was created. And the threat in that particular book, among other things, is taking everyone's information because number one, I mean, it was never formed by your actor for Facebook or any of these other. These are just actors and nitwits. They can't spell their name or tie their shoelace. These are major, major global initiatives with hundreds, if not billions of dollars put into it. You know, as we all know, DARPA and then Facebook, you know, that whole transition. And so social media was never, ever created as a neat vehicle to connect us and for us to share. Now, there's been good things that have come out of it, just like the internet. The internet was never created for us to gather great information. It was created to keep us occupied and really funnel nonsense, false stories, false history, etc. And so, like in book three, you have this group, the committee, that are trying to, you know, basically capture everyone's information into a D-Wave computer, quantum computers, quantum mechanics through Switzerland, and control everyone's life and introduce social credit scoring. Does that sound like something recent? and then with book four, which is be fun to just talk a little bit about it, but I'll leave it open to question me wherever you want to, which I'm getting the launch in 2 months, it's Britfield in the Eastern Empire. And our main themes in this is the dangers of artificial intelligence, quantum mechanics, and quantum encryption. The committee controlling the stock market and Fortune 500 companies and getting ready to crash the entire system, wiping out trillions of dollars of wealth and bankrupting basically economies across the world and introducing a one-world digital currency that everyone will have to accept or they won't be able to pay the rent or buy food. Does that sound familiar? And so these are the things that are, I mean, this is like real-world stuff happening right now in the Britfield series, which I think is very cool because everything else out there is a lot of really, like you said, crap and nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And heightened fantasy, witchcraft, demonology, occultism, demigods, superheroes, and all of that exists for two reasons. That's why the market's saturated. Number one, disconnects your kids from reality. And number two, makes them feel less than they are. Whereas I believe all kids are amazing. Every child is born with a reason, a purpose, a goal. They're born creative. They're born with talents. And unfortunately, educational systems has crushed that creativity out of them. That's a whole other story. And that's really what the Britfield series is trying to do. It's trying to inspire the next generation of children with family, friendship, loyalty, courage, hope, faith, real life stories, real events, real areas, real geography, art, architecture, history, culture, and then tapping the four C's, creativity, critical thinking, communication, and collaboration. And I've had so much fun because I'm in the final edit. I'm 5 days away from being done, 100% done with my final paper edit, just to share with your group.
Oh, I love this. Look at that.
Here's my paper edit.
Oh, my goodness. I love it.
So I'm about 50 pages away, but I'm having so much fun on the final polish, and I'm reading the scene where it has Tom, who's now 15, Sarah, 15, and Hunter, who's out, actually my favorite character now, 13, and they're debating. You know, they're getting ready to do something because they need to do it. They're after these Britfield artifacts, and it's just this wonderful, like, two or three, 4 pages of debate as they're talking back and forth and saying, well, what if we did this? Well, that wouldn't work because of this, and well, what if we were to try this? And it's like, well, yeah, but we tried that before, and it's just this really great back and forth example of collaboration, critical thinking, communication, and that's really what's through these whole all these books, and it's really teaching kids how to approach things, how to think, try things, take risks, learn from your mistakes. You know, it's like Tom doesn't like make a mistake, and then it's like the book is over. You know, he goes, well, we know what not to do this next time. You know what I mean? It's, they learn from their mistakes, and they don't get daunted down. It's almost like in the school system, you know, you make one mistake and it's like, oh my gosh, it's the worst thing that could ever happen, you know, on this false premise of test scores and SATs and all this other nonsense that don't have anything to do with education and have nothing to do with life. And so I will say this and then we can get back to it. We're in a very cool time right now. I've said before, we're in an educational reformation. That's kind of my focus. We're in a homeschool revolution. We're seeing the last days of this, in my opinion, socialistic, communistic infrastructure. We as a nation have never been more awake. Millions of people are starting to question things for the first time ever. They're starting to pull the curtain. I think we have record number of people, normal people from average life, stepping up and getting into the school boards and going out and running for positions in the political arena, everything from governor to mayor to senator to Congress. I was in Florida for 9 days as part of a Britfield campaign. We're in our second capital raise, kind of an exciting time. And I was based in Fort Lauderdale and then went up to Palm Beach and then all the way down to Miami. And I met a lot of just great key conservatives from everyday life that are running for offices. And it's just, I'm seeing that across the board. And the line was drawn, you know what I mean? And people have been called to action, all of us. And so I think it's an exciting time. It's an exciting time for Britfield. I think it's the perfect storm. And I will say this too, what's exciting is that July has been our launch. We've gone from 5.5 years of a soft launch, which is, you know, I've been on your program twice. Fantastic. Yeah. We've talked about the Britfield series. And really, believe it or not, all that's a soft launch. This is 12 years in the making. And really, quite frankly, millions of dollars has been invested into this infrastructure. But we are trying to, if you will, redefine literature, raise the bar in literature. Really the next level of literature and the whole publishing arena. Film is going to be lit and extraordinary. We can talk about that. Redefine the film industry, media, and education. Those are our four pillars. It's what we're focused on. We have a national impact. We have a global impact. We launched 4 weeks ago in Britain now. So we're like live in Britain, rolling across the entire continent. With all three books, the trilogy, from Yorkshire all the way down to Dover. I've been working with my publicist there, which is exciting. Just talked to my agent, my literary agent, this week. So this is kind of exciting news. But we just got a major publisher in India interested in the Britfield series. Wow, right? We're just about to lock in South Korea and Japan, which means they'll buy the trilogy and then translate it into their language, which is amazing because South Korea is our beachhead for Asia. I think we're going to do phenomenal in Asia. I think we're going to do great in Japan. I think it's going to take off like wildfire. Poland's been our beachhead in Eastern Europe. They've already translated all three books into Polish. And then we have Britain, where we've just launched. That's sort of our pilot and our beachhead for Europe. And we've got 18 other countries that will be purchasing the rights. We'll be at the Frankfurt Book Fair in October. So just amazing things happening. We're getting ready to launch book four. And starting next week, I will be focused on the movie, Britfield Lost Crown, first of seven films, almost full time. And so for the next 6 months, that's going to be consuming me, which is exciting. I've been waiting forever to sort of transition into that. Now, meanwhile, it's been in the works for over 2 years. I've got a wonderful producer team, and we've got a finished Britfield script, which I think I've shared. Sorry to lean in.
That's all right.
When I shared with your finished final polished script. Which we finished actually in March of this year. It took about 15 months, a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it went from 168 to 148. And we did our first pilot, which I probably mentioned on the show, in March with 12 actors, six adults and six children, actually reading through it. I mean, we recorded it. We were sitting in the back, big boardroom, taking breaks every, 30 minutes, getting feedback. It was really cool. And it was fun to watch them because it's like it was 6 hours. It's kind of long. And we broke for lunch, of course. And it's starting out and they're kind of reading it. It's moving along. But it's just like as it's picking up and they're reading it, it's like they're getting so excited. It was really cool. Like hour five, they were like just like on fire because that's the way the story is. And that's the way a movie should be. So anyway, I'll stop there.
I love that. Folks, I don't care if you're 15 or 75. The Britfield series, which, by the way, is available on Britfield.com. I believe there it is right there. The trilogy special is only $50. And I challenge you folks to find any trilogy of any kind at this level of artistic class for even double that. It's just amazing. As it was said, look, I must read for anyone in your life, a combination of C.S. Lewis and Dan Brown. Britfield is up there with Lord of the Rings. I mean, on and on and on. You offer, of course, nonstop action with exhilarating hairsbreadth escapes. So that's by Kirkus Review. But this will capture the intellect and emotion of any child, of any young man, of any man, woman, of any age, really. So it's a fabulous trilogy. Book four coming out. I love how you showed that. That's work going into that. That's blood, sweat, tears, sleepless nights. Wow. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, thanks. No, it's funny, too. I've been reading this biography on Winston Churchill. It's like an 1,100-page biography. It's the most recent one. And there's controversy behind him. But, you know, it's interesting, and I like reading it, and especially through the World War II period. But and after World War II was finished and he lost his position as prime minister, which was kind of almost shocking, he was offered a huge book deal, which he eventually wrote, you know, like six segments. I think it was 5,000 words or something of the war, the great World War II. And he described, and I wish I had it in front of me, what it was like as a writer. But it was really spot on. And it starts kind of very romantic. And it's kind of this dance. And then you start to get into it and it becomes quite a struggle. And then it becomes this beast that you're wrestling with. And towards the end, you finally conquer the monster. And I just thought, like, wow, that's exactly what it is. It's like it really takes everything that it can possibly take out of you. That's what the writing process is. And even at this final stage, it's just like hour after hour after hour, you know, and I am literally reading page after page. I sit there, I really only print 2 pages at a time. And I sit there, you know, on a chair in front of a lamp. I got a highlighter and a pen. I'm leaning back. That's kind of my final polish, my final way I do it. And I'm just literally reading it line by line. And it's like, I don't like that line and I don't like that. I can get rid of that. And you're just polishing it and tightening it and tightening it. And it is a process, and it just goes on and on and on until it's finally finished. And so probably by Thursday, I'm done. I hand it off to my editor and I can start breathing and living life again. So,
I don't think people understand what goes into the authorship of books, writing of books, screenplays, but I'm familiar with books, and I've got to tell you,
sure.
Your end product, and again, I love to read. I love books. I love this series. And folks,
thank you.
You know, look, it's we've got what, 9 days left in July. If you have any school, a high school, any school age children, please give the gift of this trilogy for summer reading. And or keep it for Christmas, or get a trilogy for yourself. I can't think of a better investment of time for people to break away and to get into the storyline, get into the excitement, the pace. And I love your character development, by the way. How you do that, man? I don't. That's a gift. How you develop the characters from one to another.
And it's something you have to keep track of, but it is fun. Like, instead of writing one book, it's almost like a movie. You know, like, how much can you really do with one movie in 2 hours as far as character development and background? That's why I think a lot of writers love the series, you know, television, because you can build and build and build. And if you get a second season and a third season, you can keep building. And I think it's the same for me, that it's fun. I mean, you know, and with Tom and Sarah in book one, Britfield Lost Crown, they're 12 years old. And so it's very distinct at 12. I don't expand that reach. And, you know, I stay true to that. And then when they're 13, it is different, right? And I've always said that from, as a child, from 12 to 13 is like a decade, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge, and then from 13 to 14, huge shift. And 15, still a big shift. And I was remembering, like, so I'll look back to myself and what was I like at 15? And it's like, you know, you get your learner's permit. It's like, oh my gosh, the freedom of driving a car. That was one of the greatest things. I mean, on my 16th birthday, I was at the DMV getting my license.
It's me,
like,
too. Yeah.
I think a lot of kids like that, but it's like, man, you cannot get that thing fast enough and have that freedom of driving. But it's just, and that was your sophomore year in high school. So I was remembering that and stuff and what you were thinking and how you were feeling and stuff. And so it's really fun to bring in that part of it. And then you have the other characters like Inspector Fontaine, who's this really strong, amazing 30-something woman from France. She used to work for Interpol until she found out the whole thing was corrupt. And she got, like, looped into the Britfield saga and the resistance. And then you have Detective Gowerstone, old school, 40s, was recruited when he came out of Christchurch, Oxford, into MI7. And spent 10 years not realizing really what he was doing, and coming into countries for democracy and really finding out that corporations were just using it to steal resources. And I put all this stuff in the books, just a little background here, a couple lines there, a paragraph there, that really explains tremendously what's going on behind the scenes. But with that said, it's a lot of fun to develop these characters. And I remember I got some feedback last week. It was from a woman, older woman. It's great too, because we get feedback from, like, you know, 12-year-olds. We get them from, like, 30-year-olds. We get them from 80-year-olds. There was an 83-year-old woman in Canada that says, I love this series. But it was a woman, and she said, I love the Britfield series. She goes, it's exciting and fun. She goes, it reminds me a lot of James Bond, but with a larger cast and a bigger purpose. And I thought, wow, like, she just summarized the whole thing. It was, like, so well summarized. And the impact we're already having on kids is amazing, too. And I don't think it was on your show, but it was, like, a couple months ago, I got a letter from a 13-year-old, 2.5 pages, spent the time, articulated it, wrote it, and was asking me some questions. One was kind of cute, because she says, what's Tom's middle name? And then other questions were, is the committee real and our secret societies real? And this is a 13-year-old. And see, what we're trying to do in so many ways is not only stimulate the imagination, bring creativity back to the child, and inspire them to think for themselves, to write, to create, but we're also trying to inform and plant seeds. And, you know, I don't expect every 12 or 13-year-old kid to understand about quantum mechanics and things like that, but it's there, and it's threaded in there. And we're revealing it and speaking it as truth, not fiction. And not some fantasy world and stuff. And if you don't mind, I just want to share something with you real quick. It's just a paragraph. But this morning I got up at like 5 o'clock, because that's when I get up. And there's a woman out of Texas or Arizona, a really nice woman, very conservative. She's got part of this huge national women's group, and they have their and they're trying to really, you know, come back to the schools and get rid of all that disgust and nonsense. And she loves the Britfield series. And she said, is there any way that you could write a quick article? And I kind of sent her some stuff, but she said, I'd like you to dig deeper and tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience as a writer and what it was like. I just want to share a paragraph with you, because I'm sharing this with your audience to exemplify the importance of education in school, and how the right teacher and the right environment and the right classroom can have an everlasting impact. And so the title is Creating the Britfield Dynasty. This isn't Shakespeare, by the way, but it's just a paragraph. I said, I believe my first inspiring moment to write was in sixth grade at Corona Del Mar Elementary in Newport Beach, California. It was a wonderful and memorable class, and the teacher, Mrs. Dickens, and I put in parentheses, ironic, inspired creativity and provided opportunities for her students to reach inside and ignite their talents. One day, we were given a daunting assignment worth 30% of our grade to write a book. Yikes. What do you write about? This was when I first learned that you write about what you know and you write about what you love. I love James Bond movies, such as The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. These films fostered my imagination. So I sat down and I wrote what would become my first book, 25 pages with pictures. James Bond, Eat Your Heart Out. The premise was, I was a 12-year-old secret agent living in Hampshire, England, and working for the British government. I had a butler, of course, a red Ferrari, and my partner was Jacqueline Smith from Charlie's Angels. I was tasked with finding and arresting a villain who was causing problems throughout Europe. There were high-speed chases, fights with his crew, and a finale at a Tudor-style mansion in Switzerland. The class was blown away. This assignment set the stage for my love of writing, adventure, travel, and Britain. Fast forward 40 years later, and we launched the Britfield Lost Crown series. And so, and it's a great, great due to that sixth grade class, being a wonderful teacher, bringing in creativity, giving children opportunities to do something fun and exciting. And here we are 40 years later. So thank you for letting me share that. I just thought it was kind of cool.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah, cool indeed. Now, I've got to ask this question, because the Britfield series, of course, it's so much more. The books are the trilogy, and the fourth book coming. I haven't seen, but I'll tell you. I mean, the trilogy is just phenomenal, well written, well done. But outside of the books, let me ask you. I know, I'm just not sure how to. Explain this. What else could you offer, for example, schools who are interested in bringing this into the fold?
Sure. It's interesting, too. I just had a conversation this morning, which almost made me late for your recordings. You know, like a patron, you know, Britfield, and one of my best friends and stuff. And she's actually thinking of starting her own school next year and wants to bring Britfield into it. And I thought, whoa, that was cool. But I think what's great about book one, number one, is it's designed to be taught in the classroom. And we have an 83-page study guide based on academic standards. And so, and it's free, frankly. If you go to the Britfieldinstitute.org, it's free to teachers. It's a $30 value because we want to bring the Britfield book into the classroom. And it walks you through it chapter by chapter. You don't have to use everything in it, but everything's there. It's turnkey. And you can teach it over a semester or a couple months. And trust me, these books are packed with it. If you want to go there, you could spend... You'd probably spend two to three weeks just on the first five or six chapters up at Yorkshire and this orphanage and why they call it the workshop, where kids have to, you know, boys have to build tables and girls have to weave baskets, the lack of education, the hunger for reading, and where each orphan every month will sneak out, run like 200 yards and try to dodge the vicious dog called Wind. Break into the Mr. and Mrs. Grievous's beautiful Victorian mansion. That's where all the money goes to. Get into their library, grab one book, exchange it for the other one, bring it back. And this is what the kids have to read. And I say all that to say I'm creating the importance of a book, of a novel, and of reading and cherishing it. And so I think that's great to bring that into it. We're already being taught in hundreds of schools across the nation. We're already in thousands of schools across the nation. We also have the Britfield and the Lost Crown theatrical play, which we launched last year to great success. There you go. Oh, wow, that was fast. Yeah, if you scanned out, really cool. So it's taking 384 pages into a two-act, 90-minute theatrical play specifically for elementary and even high schools. It has speaking roles for over 30 students, and we incorporate the entire stage and the front of the stage and the aisle, but never break that fourth wall. So you feel like you're in England. You feel like you're at Oxford. You feel like you're at Windsor Castle. You feel like you're in London. And we have 28 sound effects, 54 digital slides, turnkey for the director. We have the director's script, which walks them through with all the different, initiatives as far as, you know, lighting key and sound cue and all of that. There's my group. That's 30 awesome fourth through eighth graders. And we piloted it there over four nights in a black box theater of 220 seats, which is not ideal in many ways. But I thought,
clear, I don't know if it makes a difference, but what's a black box theater? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's kind of like it's a small theater. It's almost like in a room, if it will. It's not your auditorium.
Okay.
If that makes, a lot of actors are familiar with it in the sense, because they'll take acting classes at a black box theater, which is really just a square room that's like usually painted black with a tiny little stage, and that's where you do your work. But it's just, I thought if we pull it off there, we can pull it off anywhere, because it's really designed obviously for a theater or an auditorium or things like that and stuff. And it was great success. Kids had a wonderful time. And I think what we're trying to do with this also is we're trying to revamp theater in the United States, and specifically in the schools, and bring the theater to that next level. What theater used to be, great theater, not these weird, twisted storylines or the musicals, which alienates 90% of kids that want to get into theater, that only highlights a couple of the actors or actresses that are singing. And again, too, it's another way of getting in the witchcraft. And I'm not trying to be hard-nosed, but I'm just saying Frozen is about witchcraft. Aladdin Jr., it's about witchcraft and mysticism. And they know that. And that's why they push these types of theater plays or musicals. And so we're trying to bring in this great current time, present, real world of Britfield and England. And kids are like doing the play. They're learning about geography, art, architecture, culture, and history, and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty cool. So there's those two levels. Yeah, go ahead.
That's your pushback against the dark side, if you will. So I love that. Absolutely. All right. Here's what I'm going to do, folks. We're going to lose what I term as affiliates, including Global Star Satellite Radio. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep Mr. Stewart on for a little bit longer, because I just find this fascinating. So folks listening to this on Global Star or elsewhere, go over to Rumble, Brighteon, and other video platforms, and join me there. Again, Hagman Report, HagmanPI.com, and, of course, our channels on Rumble and Brighteon. My guest is C.R. Stewart, Chad Stewart, Britfield.com. Chad, continue, please, because this is fascinating.
Yeah, great questions, and thank you again for giving me time to talk about it. And I think on the other level of that, we have the RitfieldInstitute.org.